From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in the fall of 2014 when the battle for control of the New York State Senate was raging. Senator Ted O'Brien, a Democrat, was facing a challenge from Republican Rich Funke, a retired sports and newscaster. To state the obvious, Senator O'Brien wanted badly to win re-election, but there were plenty of other interested parties as well. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio was also interested in the Senate races. He wanted a Democratic-controlled state Senate, and apparently he was willing to help make it happen. The New York Times reports that amid this aggressive move by Mayor de Blasio, big chunks of money began to flow to some upstate races. One of the destinations was Monroe County. But you see, there are limits attached to what unions can give candidates, around $10,000. How might an organization circumvent that limit? Well, instead of giving directly to the candidate, they could give a big chunk of money to a local political party. And according to the Times, that's exactly what was happening. Unions downstate had piled up $225,000 and sent it to the Monroe County Democratic Committee. Here's where the former chair of the local Democratic Party seems to give away the game. Dave Gerritsen, who was chair in 2014, told the New York Times, quote, "Generally what happened was somebody said we have a donor who would like to help Ted. They would like to make a contribution to the county committee where the contribution limit is higher," end quote. And the Times goes on to say, quote, "Mr. Gerritsen said he had made it clear he could not promise how the money would be spent, and there were never any conversations with donors where there was a wink-wink agreement," end quote. But that might be hard to believe because the vast majority of that $225,000 went to Senator Ted O'Brien's campaign. So if the goal was to find a loophole in the law, mission accomplished. Now there are investigations apparently underway. Federal and state prosecutors reportedly looking into this money trail. U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara could get involved, fresh off his takedowns of Sheldon Silver and Dean Skelos. So this hour, we try to follow and explain the money. And let me welcome my guests for the hour. They include Dave Andriotta, a columnist with the Democrat and Chronicle. Dave, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
And Dave McLaughlin is a money and politics activist. And Dave, it's nice to see you as well.
Well, thank you for having me here.
Dave and Dave, nice to have you guys. And I want to start with just a few points here. We did reach out to a number of parties involved here. Jamie Romeo is the current Monroe County Democratic Party chair. She was not the chair in 2014. Again, that was Dave Gerritsen. Jamie Romeo is the chair now, but at the time, she was working on Ted O'Brien's campaign. She called us back last night to say that since a complaint has been filed, she does not think it is appropriate for her to make a public comment on this issue. And Ted O'Brien, who, again, received that money from the Monroe County Democratic Committee, told the New York Times, quote, "I have not been contacted by a soul about this." And he said he was not privy to conversations about how the money ended up in his campaign coffers. He told the New York Times, "I didn't have any conversations with anybody that I recall." He said, "I was so busy trying to run the day-to-day campaign stuff." So Ted O'Brien essentially saying, if anything untoward found its way into a campaign fund for me, I was not in control of it. So there's a lot of outstanding questions. Dave Andriotta, you wrote a recent column in the Democrat and Chronicle about this. What's question number one for you?
The question I would have is, really, it gets to your introduction, why Dave Gerritsen would sort of give away the game, if you will. These donations to the county committee are not in and of themselves illegal. And the transfers from the county committee to Ted O'Brien's or any campaign are in and of themselves not illegal. What makes these illegal or potentially illegal is the notion that the donations were always intended for a candidate and that the donations were funneled through an intermediary, in this case, the county committee, in an attempt to circumvent these caps. Why Dave Gerritsen would tell the New York Times that essentially people would ask him that they'd like this money to go to Ted O'Brien, and then the money actually does end up going to Ted O'Brien, it raises real questions for me. I don't understand the judgment. I mean, I understand we'll probably get into this later in this discussion, but there are more artful ways to carve up this money, I think county committees have been doing that for a long, long time.
But Dave Andriotta, when it comes to this kind of money, you make the point in your column, and we were talking before the program began, that if I'm a donor and you're a party chair, I can say, hey, I've got this gobs of money. I'd love for it to go to candidate X's campaign, Mr. Party Chair. Here's the money. And as long as you say to me, hey, I can't make any promises, that's supposed to clear you? Is that supposed to make you not culpable after that?
I think it can. Unless you turn around and actually
and
give the money to the candidate,
money.
which appears to be what happened here. Now, you can't say for sure. At least I can't say. Looking at campaign finance records that are filed with the State Board of Elections, which is all I have access to. We don't have subpoena power at the Democrat and Chronicle, unfortunately. I want to say at the time of that transaction where the donations came in, I'm going by memory here, Evan, but I want to say that the Democratic committee at that point had about $200,000 in its campaign, in its war chest. It got another $200,000 and something, $225,000 to be exact, and then transferred $218,000 to Ted O'Brien. Could some of the $218,000 have come from the original $200,000 that was already in the pot? I suppose so.
Well, they'll make that argument, won't they?
I'm sure they will. But it doesn't negate the fact that Gerritsen has all but acknowledged that the donors wanted this money to go to Ted, and lo and behold, an almost precise amount went to Ted. In fact, I think he was shy. The total amount that went to Ted was $218,000, I wrote this down here, $600 and change. There was basically about $6,500 outstanding. Interestingly enough, at the exact same time, an expense that is noted on the county committee's expense reports, financial disclosure reports, went to someone in Brooklyn who is an advisor to a state assemblyman. It just looks like an odd expense. It only says it was for professional services. I can't say what it was for, but at the exact same time this is going out, that remaining money seems to have gone to, you know, an assemblyman's aide in Brooklyn. Just seems kind of, and considering that the mastermind behind all of this is coming out of New York City, Mayor Bill de Blasio, it just seems odd.
We're going to follow up on that point in just a second, because listeners may be going, what does Bill de Blasio care about a race in upstate New York? We'll explain in a second. But Dave Andreotta, fair to say, when you read that actual quotation from Dave Gerritsen in the New York Times, you were surprised.
I was very surprised. And, you know, the reason I wrote my column, I don't think that column that I wrote the other day was published 2 days ago, I think, in the Democrat and Chronicle, 3 days ago, I guess, online. It didn't really shed any new light on this. There wasn't, you know, any real new reporting. I thought just locally we were missing a story with strong local ties that was raising some legitimate questions. This story has been in the news, I want to say, for the better part of a month, and slowly leaking out through reports in the New York Times. The Daily News has been on this to a lesser extent, the New York Post. And it was late last week that we saw this Monroe County connection, and no one seemed to pick up on it. So I felt like it was time to write about it.
And by the way, we've been talking about the Monroe County Democratic Committee and the situation with Senator Ted O'Brien. There are several others that are being checked out. So this is one in a series of 2014 races where these big chunks of money were sent to the various local party committees. And Dave McLaughlin, as someone who considers themselves an activist regarding money and politics, what are the big outstanding questions for you on this case?
Well, on this case, I'm not so certain whether or not to me it matters that much. I'm concerned with larger issues. And I think that this is important, but when you think about the larger things, how much money is really available for people at all levels of politics, that's what I'm concerned with. I'm not surprised by any of this. Maybe I'm surprised by, it sounds a little inept, you know, that they didn't go about it correctly. But what we seem to be saying is, you know, they better cover their rear ends better. And if they do that, then it's okay. Well, my feeling is that's not okay. And what's happening is that we're in a situation where we find ourselves where more money is going to become injected into politics at every level, whether it happens to be the local level. School board elections have been affected by some donors in other states. So my concern is that we tend to look at this as more the status quo, that it's a mistake here or a mistake there, but it's not something that really gets to the heart of the problem.
In other words, when you see we're circumventing donation limits and the first response is, well, they should have hit it better, that's
right.
Symptomatic of the problem of money in politics to begin with, and what you're looking for is real reform?
Yeah, because I think what's happening is that we just kind of disregard some of this. We just look at it like this is the cost of doing business in politics in Albany or in any state capital or in the Congress. And if we still feel that way, if that's our mindset, then where do we really go? How do we ever really change anything if that's what we tend to believe? I mean, this is a small thing, you know, compared to what else is going out there and how money is changing the whole course of American politics.
Sure. Listeners, if you have any questions or comments on money in politics, this particular story, or if you want to delve deeper into ideas for how to change the system if you think changes are needed, call the program. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Dave Andreotta, I think, and I think Dave McLaughlin wasn't alleging this, but you know, your reaction on this may be somewhat common and you got to do a better job of hiding this isn't an endorsement that, hey, you know, hiding money is a good idea. It's more it's more of amazement that a party chair would be allegedly bumbling, I think, is what we're talking about.
Oh, yeah, and I agree.
But not an endorsement. Yeah, I think.
Oh,
I absolutely
agree. Yeah, my eyes widened there when he said that, but not in disagreement. I actually wanted to chime in and say, I mean, this mistake here, mistake there, these types of excuses we hear from time to time, almost every time something like this arises, is what makes political reporting difficult and reporting on campaign finance very difficult. How many times have I received emails or from readers or have just come across donations that look suspicious but can't quite connect dots? Because even if you connect the dots, it's still perfectly legal. I mean, a case in point. And there's been some talk about this locally, and I'd like to see a lot more talk on it, is the idea of people or companies or individuals who are under contract with the government donating to the political players within that government, whether it be mayor, county executive, city council, county legislators. I mean, I'd like to see a flat-out ban on that. Or at least a pledge from some of these candidates to not take money from people who are doing business with the county or the city. New York City has such bans in place, or at least limits, I believe, on those kinds of donations. We don't have anything like that here. But to Dave's point, you know, it's perfectly legal. So, you know, I've gotten emails from readers who say things like, you know, you should really check out the donations from company X to the politician Y, and can you believe that politician Y, you know, just signed a contract for company X? Yeah, so what? I mean, I'd like to write that story and to say that there's something corrupt going on, but really and truly, as far as the law goes, it's status quo.
Yeah. Okay. Let me grab a quick phone call from a listener who is, I think, a union member who's not happy about this. This is Tim in Pittsford. First up, go ahead, Tim. Tim, are you there? Hold on, Tim. Kevin? There you are. Go ahead, Tim.
All right. First off, Dave Andreotta is my favorite at the DNC. I don't know him, but he does a great job. But for your other guests, that this doesn't bother. This bothers the hell out of me that a record amount of money came from maybe not my dues, but could come from my weekly dues, which are not insignificant at all. So that does bother me. And a few other points. Ted O'Brien, doesn't he work for the Attorney General now?
He does now. He works in the AG's office.
And now he's, I mean, it seems like some sort of conflict there. And wasn't Jamie Romeo his campaign manager? Or am I wrong there?
She worked on his campaign.
How do they not know anything about this?
Well,
a record amount of money gets donated to your campaign and you're not even made aware of it at all, or don't ask any questions. I'll listen. Offline.
Yeah, Tim, thanks for the phone call. Here's the other side of that. On Twitter, Danielle did not like the tone of a comment that I made earlier. Danielle saying the following. She said, you're maligning Ted O'Brien, a truly good man. Your comment reading Ted's denial sounded like you didn't believe him. Danielle, that wasn't the intention at all. I was trying to read his words so you understand. He has made a comment. He made the comment to the New York Times. His comment was he was so busy running the day-to-day part of his own campaign, probably going door-to-door, dealing with trying to win a race, that he wasn't in charge and following where the money was coming in from. That's what Ted O'Brien said. I'm not saying I don't believe him. I'm not saying I do. I'm not saying anything about that. I'm saying that's what Ted O'Brien's statement is, and people can sort of take that for what it's worth. Tim calling in saying he doesn't buy it. Tim is saying he doesn't buy that Ted or Jamie Romeo, who was helping run that campaign, wouldn't know. I don't have enough experience running campaigns, so I wouldn't know. Dave, do you buy it? Does it matter?
No. Well, first of all, Tim, thanks for your kind words about my work. I appreciate that. But on to your point, how do they not know? I don't think the question really is that they didn't know. I think it would be pretty tough to miss an influx of cash like that into one's campaign coffers. I don't think it mattered. I think that's the real issue. I don't think it mattered to them. Again, they would be able to argue that it was a transfer from the committee, and under election law, the Monroe County Democratic Committee or any county committee, Republican, Democrat, whatever party, are unlimited as to how much they can transfer into a campaign. Now, it was an outsized amount by any stretch of the imagination. A transfer like that has never been made. I can't see on both sides of the aisle, as far as I could tell from the campaign finance records I'd looked at. So it'd be hard, I think, to miss. I don't think, Tim, that they're saying that, or that there's any suggestion that they didn't know. I just don't think that it bothered them.
Okay. Dave McLaughlin?
Yeah. One of the things that I'm concerned about, when we talk about money, and we're talking about money here, but there's another thing, an influence, and that's relationships. And so the first caller made a point about that. You have people who are involved in others' campaigns. They're involved in other things. And so some of this involves not so much even just the money, but the fact that people get together and decide all of this and decide how things are going to be divvied up and who's going to be running things. And after the election is over, Ted O'Brien gets appointed as an assistant attorney general. There's a certain inbreeding there that to the average person smacks of being something that could lead to corruption.
Sure. And I, again, regarding Ted O'Brien, for his many, I think, admirers probably in this audience who have known him over the years, I would just say, I don't think anybody's saying Ted O'Brien's not qualified for his current job. I mean, he's been an attorney for many years. He's been in government. An AG's office job may be a perfectly good fit for him. And I don't know where this goes next. But before I get back to the phones, Peter in Rochester and Bob in Penfield, Dave Andreotto, we had a few questions that after your piece, you know, is this a formal complaint? Is somebody investigating? I mean, what do we know about who's checking this out?
I don't have the sources at the federal or state level to say for sure that anyone is checking this out. I'm going to have to rely on the New York Times and the Daily News
and the Wall Street Journal
At this point, and I trust what I'm reading. The focus of the investigation appears to be on two upstate county committees. That is in Putnam and in Ulster. The New York Times, though, made a point in its reporting again last Friday that it noted that there was a similar pattern that had happened in Monroe County, and where the Times got that information was, it appears, from a State Board of Elections investigator who wrote two copious memos to the State Board of Elections Chief Law Enforcement Counsel, who knew they even had such a thing, in one memo it basically outlined why she thinks there was a willful and criminal violation of the law in terms of the donations to Putnam and Ulster. And in another memo, she laid out, again, the Putnam and Ulster connection, but also said there are other counties where this pattern seems to have followed, and Monroe was one of them. So, you know, as sort of a shtick in my column, if you will, I basically made it into a formal complaint. She said in her memo, the only reason I'm focusing my attention on Putnam and Ulster is because we haven't received a formal complaint. So I said, okay, well, if that's what it takes, then take my column as a formal complaint. I think the complaints we're talking about now, though, maybe, perhaps, and I don't know this for sure, but from what I've read in reporting in the last 24 hours, Bill Rylick, the Monroe County Republican chairman, may have lodged a complaint.
Sure. And I will only say, in talking sort of behind the scenes to a number of sources in local party politics on all sides in the last couple of days, I can tell you that Democrats do take this very seriously. And we're going to find out a lot more, I think, in the coming days. But right now, as I said, Jamie Romeo, the party chair, said she doesn't think that she can talk about this publicly because there has at least been a complaint filed. Maybe Dave Andriotta's column being that complaint.
I don't know.
And one more point before back to the phones. Who are these unions? Well, Tim in Pittsford called and said, hey, I'm a dues-paying member. I don't want my money being used in this kind of a fashion. This can be offensive to me. It's not insignificant dues. The unions, according to Dave Andriotta's column, the Communications Worker of America District 1 gave $100,000. The United Federation of Teachers, $100,000. And Service Employees International's Union, 32BJ, $25,000. Those three unions. But Dave, when people, I don't know if any readers have asked you, tell me again why Bill de Blasio? Well, Bill de Blasio wanted a Democratic-controlled Senate. The rumor at the time was that the governor himself didn't mind having a Democratic-controlled assembly and a Republican-leaning Senate. That kind of was a good scenario for him. That's just the optics as we saw that. How do you explain to people who say, what did Bill de Blasio want with this?
Yeah, well, Bill de Blasio, like you said, I mean, he felt that the governor hadn't pushed a liberal agenda enough and hadn't pushed hard enough for the Democrats to take over the Senate. And this was his play to do this. According to the New York Times, sometime in September 2014, about a month before these donations were made to these upstate Democratic county committees, he had a meeting in which he gathered some of his political allies and well-heeled, deep-pocketed donors and essentially made a pitch for investing in swing races that could pull the Senate over to the Democratic side. Ted O'Brien, of course, was already in power at that time. He held the seat, but his was shaping up to be a very close race. And ultimately what we saw were unions who have a lot of money investing in races and in places of the state where they normally wouldn't where they just don't have members. They don't have a lot of relationships as far as I can tell. The UFT does have an arm here in the Rochester Teachers Association. Adam Urbanski is a quote unquote vice president of the United Federation of Teachers, I believe. Or that might be the American Federation of Teachers. I'm sorry if I've mistaken that. But in any case, Adam Urbanski is very close with the UFT. But the UFT in and of itself has no members here. They represent New York City teachers.
So in other words, it's about balance of power in the Senate. And there's nothing wrong with Bill de Blasio exerting some political leadership because if he thinks the governor's not doing enough, not fulfilling a promise, he wants to help. The question is, were laws broken regarding money? I think that's where we are.
Yep.
So hopefully that sets the landscape. Peter in Rochester, next up. Go ahead, Peter.
Hi, yes, I'm calling to point out another way in which these big money is undermining democracy and preventing us from making good decisions, our political leaders, especially towards preserving our planet for future generations. We just had a forum where we talked about the impact of industrial animal agriculture on climate change, which is a prominent effect. And in that film that was being highlighted, the Cowspiracy film, it's pointed out how many organizations, even environmental ones, were reluctant to admit the impact of it. And one can only guess that a lot of times this is due to the receiving of contributions from these big money organizations. And the farm agriculture industry certainly has lots of money to invest in that sort of thing. So in terms of democracy or taking needed action, such things could actually be suppressed by this effect of big money.
Peter, thanks for the phone call. Dave McLaughlin, what do you think?
I think he's exactly right, and I think it even goes deeper than that. When you think about the cost just to run a campaign, I think the listeners might be interested to know, for example, how much it costs to run a Senate campaign. What's the average cost to run a Senate campaign in New York State, state senator? I think it's somewhere around $340,000. When we look at the assembly races, that's $150,000 or so, I believe. So that's a good deal of money. So what it does is it takes out a lot of people from even trying or attempting to run. And I think half of the Senate is either career politicians or lawyers who maybe have more time to be able to do that than the average person. So I guess what I'm saying is this money influence, in order to run for office, you need a tremendous amount of money.
This is on all levels. I mean, you probably saw, Dave, 60 Minutes on the federal level just spent some time putting a hidden camera in the call centers that the Republicans and the Democrats have in Washington. It's about 100 yards from the Capitol. It's got to be its own campus, so it's its own building just down the street. And, members of Congress are now told by party leadership that you've got to spend 4 hours a day on the phone calling people asking for money. Now, that's Congress. We're not, in this hour, we're looking at an investigation into state politics. But Dave's point is that money, raising money, the requirement, the threshold is so high that it deters people. And then you get into office and you're told you got to spend all this time just asking people for money. And what was pretty remarkable, a couple of things came out of that piece on 60 Minutes on Sunday night. You had Steve Israel, who is retiring, I think, and he is a longtime head of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, saying that before Citizens United, it was only an hour or two a day, and now it's 4 hours a day, and look at the corruption. And I'm sitting there going, Steve, you're downplaying, and only an hour or two a day of a member of Congress? That's an enormous amount of time to begin with. And right after the program, Mark Cassini, who's running for Congress as a Republican, challenging Louis Slaughter, jumps online and is saying, I'm not doing it. I won't do that. And it's going to be very curious to see if people like Mark Cassini or other challengers win. Can you really get to Washington and not play the game? Because right now the game is you are going to get in that room and you're going to call people and you're going to say you need money, because we all do it and money is what is required. And that's, you know, so it's not quite that insidious, I think, at the state level, but, you know, there's money everywhere. And so anyway, if you want to weigh in on that or anything else on these matters, I've got a few more of your comments. I want to get a short break in. We're going to try to answer some more of your questions that have come in via email, on Twitter, and you can call the program, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Coming up in our second hour, it's a preview of the 2016 Rochester Cocktail Revival. From the history of drinks nationally and locally to the events coming up in just a few weeks and how you can still get involved. We'll talk about the rising mixed drink scene, the cocktail crowd. It's all coming up next hour on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. We're following the money in politics, inspired this conversation by Dave Andreotta's column in the Democrat and Chronicle earlier this week. He was writing about the $225,000 that made its way to then-Senator Ted O'Brien's reelection campaign in the fall of 2014, that money coming from three big chunks of cash coming from downstate unions. And now there is some investigation into this practice of trying to, I don't want to confirm an allegation, but part of the allegation is if you want to get around a limit, a campaign contribution limit, you give to the county party, they can move the money around for you in bigger chunks. And then the question is that legal? So that's part of what is being checked out and what Dave Andreotta wrote about. But I'm seeing in some of your feedback, there's this view of money in politics more writ large. So Dave McLaughlin, I'll start our second half hour with some listener questions, and some of them aimed at you here. Just one of the questions from a different Dan wants to know, what do your guests think about possible solutions? How do we get to a point where we're not trying to break rules and hide money to get money to campaigns? Dan? Dave McLaughlin. Thank you, Dan.
Dan, what I think is that there are so many ways that we could do that. It doesn't take any constitutional amendment for Citizens United to be, it doesn't take any of that. What it really just takes are laws, simple laws about how we're going to finance our campaigns at every level. And there are probably 20 or 30 ideas out there already in dealing with citizens-funded campaigns. So I think we have to get to that, but that changes a mindset that we have in this country about people being able to spend money on a campaign, whether it's a corporation or individual spending as much money as they want. And so I think we have to disconnect the concept of money and speech. Speech and money are not the same thing. And I think we're finding that out. And I think that that's why there's such an outcry about all of these campaign funds and how much money people are actually putting into it.
Yesterday on this program, Tom Golisano said that money is speech and that he wouldn't change the rules or the limits regarding money in politics other than to make it more transparent. He said the reason that Donald Trump, who he is supporting for president, has given money to both political parties is when you give money to political parties, you do get a return. But he wouldn't change that system. Do you agree that when people who have a lot of money give to parties and they expect a return, do they tend to get it?
You bet. And in fact, they get it to the tune of if you take, like, let's say $4 billion in the campaign funding of various campaigns around the country, and then you look at the return on investment, either from corporations or agricultural companies, whatever it is, it's around $4 trillion that they get in a return. So they get a massive return on investment they put in with legislation, with other changes that favor them. So I do think, without a doubt, it has a huge effect.
Well, and it's not just a quid pro quo. It's access. It's access, right? I mean, that's the key to it. If you can have FaceTime with someone who makes these decisions in government, that's worth a lot. I think it was Dan's question. You know, how to change this? I mean, I'd like to see a publicly financed campaign system like they have in New York City. It helps candidates. It reduces their reliance on big money donors, and they can gather smaller amounts up to a certain point that will then be matched to a certain point. I think in New York, in some cases, it's 4-1.
I think in New York it is.
In 4-1. I don't know. That seems to be a system that could make sense almost anywhere.
Okay. Aaron on Twitter says, my naive fix, substantially increase public funding of campaigns and impose clear, simple limits on private contributions. Maybe not naive, Aaron. I mean, that's essentially what David Gatto was just saying.
All right. Aaron.
Yeah, that's right.
He's calling you naive, I think.
Oh, is he?
No. I think he's calling himself naive. Allison writes to the program and says, joining the conversation late, have your guests said how common this practice is? And again, I think what Allison is referring to is the $225,000 that came to the Monroe County Democratic Committee back in the fall of 2014. That money then gets turned around, and almost all of it goes right to the Senate reelection campaign for Ted O'Brien, which may be a violation of the law. And Allison is saying, how common is it that they're trying to exceed contribution limits by giving to the party, the party chairman or the party committee, and they can move the money? I don't know, Allison, and I'll let our guest answer in a minute. I did talk to a number of sources in the last 24 hours who have experience in campaigns and fundraising, and I got some varied answers, and you never know exactly how much people are spinning. One person said to me, look, if somebody wants to give me $100,000, I tell them it's not that hard to find 50 people to give $2,000 to, and they can turn around and make a contribution. And all of a sudden, there's no trail. And that you get very good at figuring out how to chop the money up and make it very, very hard to trace. And that's all perfectly legal. And in this case, this person was telling me, I can't believe the Monroe County Democratic Committee didn't figure out that they had to do that. Another person in politics told me they don't think this is that common, and this was so ham-fisted because it was the sign of somebody who didn't have the experience, didn't know you shouldn't be doing it, didn't know what to do with a big chunk of money, et cetera. So two very different viewpoints. Dave Andretta, what have you heard?
Yeah, I would just say that I think it came across as ham-fisted because of the size of the donation. What do you do? How do you move $225,000? I mean, the right way to do it, I suppose, would be to start parsing it out to candidates that you think have a good shot at winning election or re-election. But again, that gets to the heart of this problem with the O'Brien case, is that these donors apparently wanted it to go to Ted, and lo and behold, most of it did. How common is this? It's really hard to tell. It's very hard to tell because we don't see donations of this size coming in. Most donations to county committees, they can range from $100 to, you know, and I'm talking about average here, to, you know, $100 to $10,000. And that would be from, you know, maybe a local real estate developer, not pointing a finger at anyone in particular, but, you know, you see these types of donations coming from contractors, real estate developers. people with business interests in the community. That's not unusual. Where do those $10,000 go? It's very, very difficult to track. I mean, to give listeners an idea of you know how common maybe this is or not common. I mean, I looked through the Monroe County Democratic Committee's records, financial disclosure records over the last 10 years. You can find them right online. You can trace the money yourself. What I found is that the Monroe County Democratic Committee really, it wasn't that common that they were transferring money to candidates. In fact, it's more common on the Republican side, but we're not talking about dirty money here on the Republican side. We're just saying committee money that was in their account being transferred to a particular candidate. Democrats don't do it that often. As a matter of fact, it mostly goes the other way. Individual Democratic candidates locally raise money and then transfer it to the committee for their own party building exercises. Sandy Frankel, was a candidate in 2015. From what I could tell, in the months leading up to the election, got a grand total of $3,500 from the Monroe County Democratic Committee. $3,500, and that was one of the biggest transfers that I'd seen in several years, save for Ted O'Brien's monstrous $218,000.
It's like the Far Side comic with the guy who's walking out of a piano store with a trench coat, and the trench coat is in the shape of a piano, and the store assistant is saying, "Sir, did you drop this?" And it's like it's a screw from the piano, not realizing there's a piano under there. You're going to get caught at $218,000. Before I get back to the phones, Dave McLaughlin, your thoughts on how common this might be.
I don't think that type of thing is common at all. I think Dave's right. I mean, I do think that there are other ways of influence, and I get back to that. I don't think the money thing is the major thing. At $200,000+, that's kind of a ridiculous amount of money to try to hide.
Well, and I just want to touch on one other thing here, and I want to describe a little bit, a quick anecdote that my colleague Dave Riley reported on during this LDC scandal. I'm going to say this was maybe 2 months ago or so, 2 or 3 months ago. And it was in reference to some campaign donations that were made to Maggie Brooks by Dan Lynch, one of the central players in the LDC scandal. And he one of his companies, Treadstone Corporation, had given more than it could to Maggie Brooks. Maggie Brooks returned $10,000, and Bill Reilich, according to, he told Dave Riley, and Dave Riley reported this, Bill Reilich said, "Well, there's a way you can handle that. Send it to the committee." Now, Bill Reilich, from what I could tell, that the Republican committee never then just gave it back or transferred it into Maggie Brooks' campaign. Never happened. So there wasn't the intermediary routine that we've seen here with Ted O'Brien, or apparently have seen here, it's a perfect example of a party boss saying, you've reached the limit to this one candidate, but we're all part of the same family. If you want to give, we'd be happy to take it here,
okay.
Meaning a committee.
Yeah. All right, let me get out to Bob in Penfield next up. Go ahead, Bob.
Thanks for taking my call. First, I really appreciate the conversation, and Dave Andreotta is probably one of the best columnists we've got locally.
It's like a fan club for you today, Dave.
Jeez. Thank you.
I think so, yeah. I just want to comment and something of the quickly putting it in the context of the other Dave, I think, which is there's a larger issue here, and that issue is the fish stinks from the head. We see what goes on at the federal level. We've seen at the state level what's going on with the indictments around silver. And by the way, that was all done through Preet Bharara there out of New York, the Fed, not the state AG.
Right.
And what we've got here, I think it's ironic mentioning Bill Reilich or whatever,
mm-hmm.
In the context of corruption in Monroe County, which is we had the I-square as the most recent example of the kind of inbred back-scratching and order-taking that goes on. So my question, and there is a question, what would Dave or your panel or yourself say, what can we do in Monroe County about this as voters, as citizens, because clearly it's not going to happen at the federal level, and it's questionable whether ethics, as opposed to what's legal, will occur really at the state level. So what might we do here in Monroe County? And I'll take the call offline. Thanks,
Greg. Bob, thanks. I mean, built into this question is how you change a system that protects the status quo that's good for the people in power. It's the same reason that you'll never see the border count as our election system, even though it's the most fair way to reward who voters truly want in an election system. And if you missed the recent show on it, look it up, B-O-R-D-A. It's called the Board Account. It's how we elect the American League MVP. It's how we choose a lot of different things. We just don't choose elected leaders because it is the hardest system to manipulate. So elected leaders around the world know we don't want that system. We like things that we can manipulate. So Dave McLaughlin, when it comes to the kind of changes that our caller is seeking, that Bob in Penfield wants to see, he's saying, what can we do on a local level? What do you do? How do you answer that?
Well, I asked that same question maybe 15 years ago when I started in on this. And at that time, it was very frustrating because we were getting nowhere. People didn't even want to hear about this. They didn't think it was that big of an issue, or they put it behind them anyway. But lately, in the past couple of years, there's been a real push towards doing something about this. And whether you're a Bernie Sanders supporter or not, I think that his message is a very clear one, and it's striked home with a lot of people. And that's the idea that we need to spend our time making a political revolution. We have to get people involved, and I mean millions and millions of people involved. And that's starting to happen, and I think that needs to be encouraged. So that I think that there is a way out. And there's a way out of it when pressure is placed upon our legislators to say, we've had enough as people, as voters, and we're not going to take this, and we want to do something about it. So I do think that there's a possibility that things can happen, and can happen quickly.
Okay. And that is certainly the optimistic view, but that also doesn't have, I don't know if Bob's looking for a policy proposal or a way to tangibly change anything on a local level. I knew part of what I hear Dave McLaughlin saying is get involved, stay involved, don't just vote every 4 years. A lot of politics is local. It's the one that very few people vote in. So your vote has even more weight in local elections, especially in off years. But is that part of the message? Get involved, stay involved, all the way down to the local level?
That's part of the message. And the other part of it is to not give in to the cynicism. I think that there's a time to be naive. And when you're naive about this, you say, oh my God, this is actually happening. And then you get more and more people involved. So I think that there are too many cynics out there, that nothing can be done. This is our system. This is what's going to happen. And I don't think that necessarily has to be the case.
Okay. Dave Andriana?
I guess I would just add, you know, in terms of a policy change, you'd really need a sea change. But what I would like to see, to the caller's point, is I'd like to see a system in which the average person who's interested in running for office doesn't have to go crawling to party bosses to make it a reality. That is what we have right now. And anyone who tries to challenge that gets dragged through the mud. We actually saw that with lovely Warren a few years ago. You know, she didn't have the endorsement of the Democratic Party, and she got tossed through the mud and came out victorious in the end. Now, she did have a benefactor in a local political giant in David Gant, but she was up against the bosses. I'd like to see a system that allows for newcomers to come in without having to climb the ranks through the party. People who just have good ideas and that aren't wealthy. I mean, Donald Trump is doing that on the Republican side right now, but he's very wealthy, and to some extent, not as much as he would like you to believe, he's financed some of his own campaign. Most people can't do that, which is why I guess I would argue again for a public financing system that would allow the little guy to do that.
Your colleague Gary Craig points us to check out the Supreme Court hearing on Bob McDonnell, the former governor of Virginia. If you've been following that story, it's about political corruption and quid pro quo. And Dahlia Lithwick, writing on Slate Magazine Online calls it the everybody does it defense. She says the Supreme Court is thinking about letting McDonald off the hook because it can't even define what political corruption is anymore. And this morning, they're debating the fact they don't even know what the quo is in a quid pro quo. So, you know, Dave McLaughlin, I guess you're laughing, but probably laughing in that exactly.
That's the case. And I like Dave's suggestion about the campaign financing and getting more people involved and letting them run for office, I think is great. But we need to figure out how much we're going to tolerate the back door that goes on in Congress. See, Citizens United to me is a minor step, but the lobbying that happens every day in Congress, what goes on, I mean, who writes the laws in Congress is basically the lobbyists, right? A lot of the laws because the other guys are too interested in trying to call for donors. So I think that we don't have definitions for this stuff. We don't know what, you know, people are not giving somebody a sack of money. They're saying as their career path leads them, people are in the House or the Senate, their career path will be, I'll get elected to the House of Representatives. And then when I retire, I'll get a job lobbying for some firm. And that's what I think happens.
Let me grab Robert in Fairport next up. Go ahead, Robert.
It seems like the prosecution and how these cases are handled is very uneven. If you go back to 2012, Preet Bharara actually prosecuted Dinesh D'Souza for a $10,000 straw donation to Wendy Long's New York State Senate campaign. He did jail time for this. Do you see a similar situation, a possibility for this? Any possibilities of jail time for this sort of thing?
I can only say that a violation of this law, which if anyone is interested, not to get too into the weeds here, but election New York State Election Law Section 14-126, 0.5 and 6, this makes the circumventing of spending limits, or sorry, donation limits through an intermediary like this, a misdemeanor and or a felony, depending on the level of involvement.
The level of involvement, not the size of the money?
Not the size of the money.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And in terms of jail time, it would be the felony. It would be an E felony. That does allow for, I believe, up to I'm going to misspeak here, but it does allow for jail time. I want to say it's either up to a year or between 1 and 4, but I'm really not sure. But it does allow for jail time. Could someone go to jail? Yeah, I suppose someone could. Will anyone? No. Absolutely not. I mean, we see drunken drivers who kill people who are ultimately charged with an E-felony and, you know, spend 6 months in jail. I don't think that this would rise to that level in any prosecutorial office.
Dave McLaughlin, how shocked would you be if someone went to jail over this?
Over this? I would be more than shocked. That's not going to happen. I mean, it can't happen. I mean, we've got enough trouble.
It could. The law says it could.
Well, the law says it could, but the law says we should have done something about the people in Wall Street and how many went to jail with that. I mean, it's not going to happen.
Okay, well, last quick comment. Clarence writes to the program and says, sounds like you guys have been beating up on union contributions. They don't give nearly as much as corporations. Think maybe this has been a little one-sided. I would just say, Clarence, we are talking about specific contributions in a specific case, $225,000 from three downstate unions who were essentially directed to give the money to this county, Monroe County Democratic Committee, so it could end up in one person's Senate reelection campaign, and it did. And that looks like it might be illegal, and that's the allegation. We didn't spend the hour parsing who spends more on politics, unions or corporations. So, Dave McLaughlin, have we been unfair to unions?
I don't think so. I mean, the unions are still involved in it, and they are less. I mean, the caller's right. But no, this is something that's a particular incident that happened. I don't think you can.
Dave Andrew.
No, I'd agree. I mean, we're speaking about these donations in the context of what happened in this case.
Yeah. Okay. Then last question then, Dave McLaughlin, what's the last thought for audiences who are maybe frustrated by money in politics? What's the message? What's the takeaway from this story, but also the broader issue?
I think for this story, it's, you can see corruption at every level. You can see management of money and, you know, where it's being spent. But the larger thing is that this has to be a political revolution to stop money from having this much effect on people's lives and on the life of our politics.
We will keep seeing stories like this, won't we, Dave?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thanks for being here. And Dave Andreotta, again, is the reason that we were here today, because of his work in the Democrat and Chronicle. And if you're part of the Dave Andreotta fan club, we'll start a website for you guys. I joke. No, Dave's a great friend and does great work at the Democrat and Chronicle. And if you're not a subscriber, then you can't find out. I mean, I guess in a limited fashion every month, but you can rectify that by subscribing. Thank you, Dave Andreotta, for being here.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
Short break. If anybody needs a drink, it's the Cocktail Revival next.